argue they are essential to economic growth and should be made permanent. Critics of the expanded child tax credit, which expired last year, doubling child poverty rates, warned it would discourage people from re-entering the workforce. Researchers at the University of Chicago and MIT found that the expanded child tax credit did not impact parents' decisions to enter or leave the workforce. Hughes notes working is not free if you have children. For many parents, it's less expensive to stay home than pay rising child care costs.
An expanded child tax credit that's available to all low-income families can actually help some families re-enter the workforce because now they can receive child care.
Making corporate tax breaks permanent is projected to cost $500 billion, but Hughes says making the child tax credit fully refundable, where families get assistance even if they don't earn enough to owe taxes, would have a much lower price tag of between $10 and $20 billion.
The most impactful part of the legislation was what made it available to all families, including very low-income families. And actually, in 2021, as a result of the expanded child tax credit, child poverty was cut in half.
This is Eric Galatis for the Wyoming News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, November 27th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Zoe Carina, Reed Johnson, and David Rosenberg. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Mark Moran, and Nadia Ramlagan. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News. I'm Zoe Carina. I'm here with Marissa from Portland People's Outreach Project, or PPOP, talking about their upcoming benefit event with Rahab Sisters and the Equi Institute. Welcome to the show. How did you become involved with Portland People's Outreach Project?
Thank you so much for having me. I started with Portland People's Outreach Project 2 years ago in the fall of 2021. And I had been working with a harm reduction organization in Santa Cruz County while I was living down there during the pandemic. And it rekindled my love for harm reduction, which actually had started a decade earlier. So this has been a long time in the making.
Awesome. So Portland People's Outreach Project, or PPOP for short, is co-organizing its first ever fundraiser with Rahab Sisters and the Equi Institute. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So can you tell me more about the event, like where it'll be, when it'll be, what can you tell us about this event?
Yeah, this event should be a really good time. It's Saturday, December 2nd. 3 to 6 p.m. at the Armory or Portland Center Stage, which is downtown on like around Davis Street. And we're going to have a lot of entertainment there. We're going to have a DJ, DJ Alasso, drag performances by Izani. We're going to have food by Anino and drinks. The drinks were donated from Workers Tap, from Fracture Brewery, and from Straightaway Cocktails. So thanks to all of them.
That's awesome.
Oh, we're also going to have raffle prizes. And we're hoping just to have a good dance party, a good time. So come on down.
Amazing. And I heard there are suggested donations. And if people want to purchase alcohol, that's also for purchase?
Yeah, entrance is by donation, but we welcome people from all income levels. So if you go to our RSVP page, you can choose whatever entrance donation works for you, and there's a $0 option. And we welcome everyone, seriously. The drinks, the non-alcoholic drinks and food is free, and alcoholic drinks are by donation.
Amazing. And that aligns with PPOP's mission to serve, you know, underserved, maybe lower zero income communities. And can you tell me a little bit more about when the organization first started, about its history?
Absolutely. So PPOP started in February of 2015 when one of our founding members used to work for the People's Harm Reduction Alliance in Seattle and moved to Portland, realizing that we had a desperate need for harm reduction here. We started out as just a kind of a standard needle exchange, offering syringe services, sharps containers, Narcan, stuff like that, via bike outreach downtown. And at the time, there was no needs-based exchange at all in Portland and no harm reduction services on the weekend. So we filled a huge gap there. And then it wasn't long after that that we expanded to be able to offer Saturday services and Sunday services. So within a year, we had expanded to 3 days a week and began offering additional supplies to support people experiencing homelessness, such as food and water and clothing and wound care supplies and safe sex supplies and hygiene supplies and things like that. So we expanded really quickly and are now deeply embedded in the community. And we have a lot of collaboration with other community-based organizations too, like Portland Street Medicine.
That's amazing. And for this soiree, you are co-organizing with two other organizations. Can you tell me a little bit about Rahab Sisters? What does their organization do?
Yeah, Rahab Sisters does radical hospitality. They started as an organization that supports sex workers, and now they just support anyone who is identifies as female, trans, or non-binary. With radical hospitality. So they give out a lot of food and supply deliveries, and they also have people come and eat meals and have a clothing, they have like a clothing drop-in shopping area. And they also offer some medical services. They do a lot, and they've been around for a long time, and they also support people of low incomes and people experiencing homelessness over in Eastern Portland.
That's amazing. And the third partner is the Equi Institute. Can you tell me about them?
Yeah, Equi Institute is amazing. They're named for Marie Equi, who just gave medical care to everybody who needed it, marginalized folks, and gave people abortions and just really went against the grain. So Equi Institute offers a lot of medical services and recovery services that are aimed towards the LGBTQIA2S population. One thing that they're doing right now is they have a Red State Migrant Fund. So they're providing support to people who are moving here from those red states that are having these like super anti-trans legislation. And a lot of the money from this fundraiser is going to go to that migrant fund for them. And their recovery services are just kind of self-defined recovery. So they offer harm reduction as well, and also more traditional recovery pathways.
Wow. So part of the money being raised will go to PPOP working for like PPOP's drop-in center on
Yes.
the East Waterfront. So can you tell me what kind of impact that space has had for participants and for volunteers?
Absolutely. First, I'll just note that all of the funds from this party are going to be split evenly between our three organizations, which just is a very powerful thing that we're doing, to not be competing with each other and to come from a place of abundance where we can all share resources and like expand each other's impact. But yeah, for PPOP, we're trying to keep our drop-in center open for 2024. Our drop-in center is the first time we've been able to offer indoor respite with our services. All of our other services are outreach, where we'll go and meet, we'll go to places where encampments are at. We'll meet people where they're at, and we love that, and that's super important. But we also want to give people a place to come to us and be indoors and rest. So we have a like community living room space. We have bathrooms that are accessible. We have a phone charging station. We have all of our regular supplies. And then we also collaborate with Portland Street Medicine to offer medical care there. And we collaborate with Cascade AIDS Project to offer HIV and HCV or hepatitis testing and follow-up care and PrEP referrals, which is super cool and super important. The impact of the drop-in center, in my opinion, is it allows us to reach more people with our wraparound services, and it allows us to build community better, because now people can come, and they do hang out at our other outreach sites, but they can come and hang out indoors and be on couches and make friends and build community, and also like be able to have a private space to go get wound care if they need, and be able to like use our hygiene services. So yeah, we think it's super important that we're able to offer this service.
Yeah, I think so too. And for the Rahab sisters, what will they be putting the money towards?
I know they're starting a new community health program. And so I wonder if it's going towards that, because they're trying to expand their health services. And they also partner with Equi on stuff. So I know that their money is going directly to support their participants with food and supplies and health services.
That's amazing. Okay. So if our listeners are interested in learning more about the Solidarity Soiree, what's the best way for them to do that?
That is a great question. You can go to any Instagram, PPOP Instagram, Rahabs, or Equi Institute, and it'll be on there. It's on our Facebook, Portland People's Outreach program on Facebook. It's on our website, which is portlandpeoplesoutreach.org. I'm also going to list the RSVP link right here. It's bit.ly/solidaritysoiree. Again, that's bit.ly/solidaritysoiree. And you can get your tickets and just be ready to walk right in. You can also just show up at the door, though. You do not have to RSVP.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Do you have any final thoughts or things you'd like to share about the event or any of the organizations?
Yeah, I think I just want to say that everybody in Portland is acutely aware of the systemic failure to support people experiencing homelessness, especially those who use drugs here. And we're all looking for a solution. And these three organizations and ones like it are the solution. Besides the fall of capitalism, I think our organizations are the next best bet. We know what works. It's housing first models, non-punitive measures, no gatekeeping, low barrier, compassion-based, trauma-informed. And that's what we're all doing. We're trying to create a new default treatment for people and trying to, to bring in a new way to treat those who are most marginalized among us.
Thank you so much. That was Marissa from PPOP speaking with me about their upcoming Solidarity Soiree with Rahab Sisters and the Equi Institute. The Solidarity Soiree will be held on December 2nd, Saturday, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Armory or Portland Center Stage. That's 128 Northwest 11th Avenue. For KBOO News, I'm Zoe Carina.
We'll be right back.
This is KBOO News in Depth. I'm Reed Johnson. Healthcare affordability is an increasing problem in the United States. Physicians for a National Health Program has published a summary of Medicare Advantage overpayments that shows how so-called MA plans are making huge amounts of money from taxpayers and Medicare enrollees. To learn more, KBOO's David Rosenberg spoke with James Kahn, a retired professor of health policy at the University of California at San Francisco and an editor and blogger at Health Justice Monitor.
Medicare Advantage overpayments, what's going on there? I haven't heard such good things about Medicare Advantage to begin with. Is this just something on top of that?
It is. There are a lot of problems with Medicare Advantage, but one of the biggest problems is that Medicare Advantage, that is to say the Medicare Advantage plans, which are private insurers, have figured out how to manipulate the payment system to earn lots of extra payments. And I use the word earn advisedly. It's not really earn, it's to capture vast overpayments. And what happened recently is that Physicians for a National Health Program assembled all of the estimates of the ways in which Medicare Advantage plans game the system. And the result was a total capture of excess funds that is an astounding amount of money. There are some uncertainties in any estimate like this, but the amounts are certainly over $100 billion per year. This includes attracting less expensive enrollees, so people who, even when you adjust for their diagnoses, are less expensive. And this comes to about $44 billion a year. In the jargon of my field, it's called risk selection, finding people who are less expensive. Another $20 billion goes toward upcoding of diagnoses. And so people who might have had one questionable diagnosis of congestive heart failure are coded as having congestive heart failure, even though no one's doing anything because it's not really a real diagnosis for them or it's not a consequential one. So that's $20 billion. And then there's $24 billion in geographic and quality score pay bumps. Well, these quality scores don't actually mean anything. They're just gamed. They have no clinical meaning or consequences. And finally, there's some technical issues in how traditional Medicare is used to set the payment rates. You add all this up, and the Medicare Advantage plans are bringing in an extra $106 billion a year, maybe even more than that, but conservatively, $106 billion a year. To put that in perspective, that amounts to about $2,240 per Medicare Advantage enrollee per year.
And where's the oversight on this, if any?
Well, I think what it comes down to is that the people at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, known as CMS, which administers Medicare, they're outgunned. They're outgunned technically or legally in the sense that even though the CMS folks have done some of the best research on these overpayments, they're confronted with legions of lawyers and technical experts in the private insurers who manipulate the system. One example of this recently was that the CMS folks a few months ago proposed an adjustment to the way that diseases are coded to avoid the overcoding, to correct for the overcoding. And they proposed doing this in the first post-COVID year of setting the payment rates. And the insurance companies pushed back very hard. And the result was that the insurance companies, for pushing hard for a few months, got back $10 billion in overpayments that CMS knew about and asked for correction, but lost that battle. And this brings me to the other way that CMS is outgunned, and that is the private insurance companies have tremendous influence in Washington, tremendous political influence. through lobbying and donations. This certainly includes the Republican Party, but unfortunately, it also includes many, in fact, most Democrats. They are getting lots of money from the private insurers. And so when CMS is trying to do its job, its oversight job, and they have the technical chops to do it, they are prevented from following through on their technical findings by political pressure from Congress. And so, again, I just want to emphasize CMS has done really good work to understand these problems. And there's a special advisory group that's been around forever called MedPAC, which is the Medicare advisory group. And MedPAC also is, you know, convened by the government as an advisory group. They know exactly what's going on. They have done some spectacular research, but getting the Congress and the administration to support CMS in adjusting some of these things is really difficult. I will say also that until PNHP assembled all of these estimates in one place, it's a little hard to add them up. You know, I knew about the risk selection. I knew about the inflation of the diagnoses. And I knew that these private insurers were also getting geographic and quality bonuses. But to see it all in one place and add it up and it comes out to more than $100 billion a year, more than $2,200 per enrollee per year, it's just stunning. It is an unbelievably huge scam.
Would it be better to get rid of Medicare Advantage altogether?
Absolutely, it would be better. First of all, traditional Medicare, which relies on direct fee-for-service payments to doctors and hospitals, is a much better buy for the taxpayer and for beneficiaries. So we should be doing
more
of
that. You think that conservatives would be able to sell that to their constituents, right? Saving money?
Well, conservatives are very influenced in what they think and say by the insurers. So the argument has been for decades that if you let private insurance companies work within a fixed budget per beneficiary, it's called a capitation rate. If you let them provide quality health care, they can save money and improve quality. And there may have been a few instances of that, maybe Kaiser in its early days, but that's not how it's shaken out. You look at the performance measures, Medicare Advantage plans in general do about the same as traditional Medicare, maybe better on a few measures. But when people get sick in Medicare Advantage, they have trouble getting care and they leave. That's part of the risk selection problem. So that people get sick, they go back into traditional Medicare, in which it's easier to get care. So they've been gaming the system. But the myth that was promulgated decades ago with limited data and has been counteracted but not dropped, the myth is that somehow or other, these private insurance companies can skim off a bunch of profits and still reduce expenditures and improve quality. And they keep saying that. They keep arguing that they're doing that. But this kind of analysis, which shows that actually they're spending huge amounts of extra money, which goes largely into profits. Meantime, there's no evidence that the outcomes are any better. And in some cases will be worse and care will be harder to get. Really, what it says is that there is no advantage to Medicare Advantage. Traditional Medicare would be better, but the real solution, of course, would be to completely revamp the system and go to a single government payer like there are in many other wealthy countries and let the government pay for healthcare, let the doctors and hospitals and other health professionals deliver care and get paid by the government. The system we have now is crazy fragmented. Within Medicare, you have this distinction between traditional Medicare, which could be improved, and Medicare Advantage, which is horrendous in the ways I've mentioned. You also have scores of other government programs and hundreds, if not thousands, of private insurance. So now, it used to be 15, 20 years ago, if you were insured, you could count on being able to afford your health care. And now, being insured is not enough because the high deductibles, it can be $5,000 or $10,000 or more before the insurance kicks in. It's completely inadequate. And then both the private insurers in the employer market, so the insurance people get at work, plus the private insurers in the Medicare market are creating these narrow networks where there are limited numbers of physicians people can go to. The lists are often inaccurate. So you think you have access, say, to a hematologist or a neurologist, but when you call that person, they're not in the network or not taking new patients, or sometimes even not alive. So sometimes these lists include doctors who have passed away. So it is a major scam. This Medicare Advantage piece of it, $100 billion plus, is a big part of the problem, but it is also not the whole problem. Very similar phenomena with the job-based insurance. And of course, this doesn't even get to the issue that about 10% of adults are simply uninsured.
Have you taken your findings to Congress yet, or is there an opportunity to do that? Or would it matter, given what you said
previously?
Yeah,
that's a really good question. I mean, I personally, certainly the relevant congressional staffers are completely informed on all of these issues, which I'm talking about congressional staffers from the more progressive side of the Democratic representatives and senators. Certainly there is a critical mass of our elected officials who are support real change, real regulation of Medicare Advantage, and really the most important thing ultimately is system reform to a single payer. Bernie Sanders, of course, has introduced his single payer bill, had I think about 20 co-sponsors, not 100% sure of that number. Pramila Jayapal in the House with her single payer bill had about 120 co-sponsors. So not enough right now to prevail, but very good levels of co-sponsorship. And importantly, polling of the U.S. population shows support for single payer. If you ask the question fairly, if you say, would you like the government to be responsible for paying for health care if your taxes would have to go up, but you would no longer have to pay premiums, deductibles, or cost sharing? If you ask it that way, support is about 2/3 of everyone. So it's higher among the Democrats. And there's actually a surprising level of support among Republican voters when it's explained that way. So there's a continues to be huge interest in this. And of course, I have to acknowledge massive opposition from the insurers and others who would lose out financially. But that's, to me, there are two angles of attack in Congress. One is to improve regulation of Medicare, in particular Medicare Advantage, and to establish some important principles, like negotiate for drug prices. And as you and your listeners know, the Inflation Reduction Act that Biden signed into law includes a modest but not trivial element of drug price negotiation, and that's working its way through the rulemaking process. And recently, the initial drugs to be for which the prices would be negotiated were announced. And so that's part of it. But the other part is to keep our eye on the prize, which is universal coverage with a single government payer that would assure that everyone is covered from birth to death with really good insurance. And importantly, with the same insurance. Right now, part of the problem is everyone's got different insurance. So you go to the doctor's office and you spend half of the visit trying to figure out what's covered and what isn't. Maybe the doctor prescribes a medicine and you go, well, that sounds good, doc, but I don't think it's on the formulary for my insurance. And then everyone has to scramble, figure out what other drug might work. All of that goes away when everyone's covered with the same insurance, the same formulary, and the savings, the annual savings in simplified administration of the system are on the order of $700 billion. That's not only getting rid of the profits, but also just making the paperwork an order of magnitude simpler.
That's the problem. It would just be too simple and direct. It makes too much sense. Never work.
That's the problem. It makes too much sense. I hear you.
That was retired UC San Francisco professor James Kahn speaking with KABU contributor David Rosenberg. For KABU News in Depth, I'm Reed Johnson.
Help me now, babe. Please. You gotta help me. Cause I need somebody. I need you right now. Come on now. Let me know that you need me, dude. I'm gonna tell you this one.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
This month, besides being the season of Thanksgiving, here at KABU we celebrate Native American heritage. Tune in throughout the rest of the month for special programming hosted and produced by Native American creators, as well as programming highlighting Native American, First Nation, Indigenous, and Aboriginal cultures here on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night drive.